This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE-FM. I'm Chris Policano. District Council 37 is the city's largest union of city workers, representing 125,000 members. We're part of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME. This show is on the air on Sunday evenings at 8 p.m. We rebroadcast on Wednesdays at 1:30 p.m. Anything that you hear on this show and you want to make a comment about, please drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. This evening, we've got a very interesting program. I always hate when people say, well, this evening we have a very... But this evening, we do have a very interesting program. Danny J. Homan is the president of Iowa Council 61, AFSCME. He is a member of the executive board of the National Union. He is a longtime president of Iowa Council 61. And perhaps more than anyone else, certainly in the studio today, Danny Homan knows that elections have consequences. And in addition to, we've been talking a lot about what the election of President Trump means, but also on November 8th, 2016, there were a lot of local elections across the country, a lot of state races, a lot of gubernatorial races. And what happened in Iowa is what we're going to be talking about and its effects on labor, working people. Welcome to the show, Danny Homan.
Thanks, Chris. Nice to be here.
As I said, there was an election on November 8th. It was a shocker to many folks across the country, but something very specific happened in the state of Iowa. Why don't we talk about that?
Well, yeah, Chris, I would agree that the election was a complete shock. I mean, no one gave Mr. Trump a chance to win,
including Mr. Trump. I mean, he thought
he was ready to call it a rigged election. Right. So we won't go there. Anyway, in Iowa, Iowa is a progressive state, but yet it's a conservative state, if you can marry the two things. And on November 8th, when I went to bed that night, I realized that Democrats had lost control of the Iowa Senate. We have a governor in Iowa that has his now claim to fame as the longest serving governor in the history of the country. And he's a Republican, and he has wanted to wipe out collective bargaining for 185,000 folks in Iowa, probably since the law was passed in 1974, because he voted against it. And on November 8th, the Republicans took control of the Iowa Senate. We had Democratic control during his first 6 years of his administration. So all the bad bills that the Iowa House wrote and
just
passed.
Let's break this down. The Iowa House is Republican. The Iowa Senate, State Senate is Democratic. And Terry Branstad is the governor, and
correct,
he's a Republican. So you've
correct
had this situation where...
We had split. We've had a split government. And the Democrats have always been supportive of working people in Iowa. I want to say working people, not necessarily unions, working people, which unions are part of. And so every time for the last 6 years, the Republicans have passed very egregious laws taking away rights to collective bargaining. Those bills would go to the Iowa Senate and die. The Senate was our firewall. Well, we lost that firewall on November 8th, and I knew we were in for some trouble. I didn't know exactly what they were going to do, but I knew they were in some way going to take away our rights to collectively bargain as we knew them prior to November 8th. And that's exactly what they did.
Now, let me back up. I want to make sure that we're clear for listeners, but I also want to clarify something, because something is true that I didn't realize until you mentioned it when we were speaking yesterday, which is that Iowa has been a right-to-work state since 1948.
Well, it's actually 1947.
Okay.
Yeah, we were much like New York prior to 1947. You know, right to work did not exist. In 1947, Republicans were in control. of both the governor's chair and both houses, both chambers of the Iowa legislature, and they passed right to work. There were, I didn't realize it until we started researching it, there were mass demonstrations about this.
And
the Republicans rammed it through.
And what did that mean to unionized workers in 1947?
Well, I wasn't there in 1947, right. obviously. But in 1947, I believe no one really understood what the meaning was. You know, what is this right to work? Everybody views right to work as, hey, I have a right to have a job.
Right.
It's not even anything close to that. Right to work means you have the right to be fired at any point in time for any reason without cause, just because the boss wants to fire you. You have no job protections with right to work. And that's the fallacy. And quite frankly, a good job that the Republican Party and their allies have done, they have spun the two words, right to work,
right.
The three words, right to work, into something that they claim is positive for everyday workers. And quite frankly, it's the exact opposite. It will lower rate wages. It will take away benefits. And it will eliminate job security in any state that right to work has ever been passed.
So in 1947, they passed right to work in Iowa. But in 1974, something happened that protected workers in the state of Iowa. I believe you passed the collective bargaining law.
Correct.
Tell us about it.
There were numerous strikes going on in Iowa in the early 70s. And again, the Republicans were in control of the governor's chair, both chambers of the legislature, and they wanted to end the strikes. So in 1974, they proposed a collective bargaining bill. This bill was debated for 12 days, not 12 hours. 12 days of the Iowa legislature was designated for debate over this bill. There were over 150 amendments filed to this bill. And every one of those amendments was debated. And in the end, they came up with a compromise. Okay. One of the Democratic leaders at that time was John Connors. He was a firefighter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Very instrumental in this. And what they came up with in Iowa, we came up with, didn't really know it until recently, one of the best collective bargaining laws in the country. We gave up our right to strike. That was a compromise.
Uh-huh.
But we got final and binding arbitration, which meant if the parties could not decide or come to an agreement on an issue, then we could submit that to a third-party neutral. And their decision was final and binding. Both parties, win, lose, or draw, had to live with it. And that's what we got out of that. Now, the other compromise was, instead of having total and complete open scope of bargaining, we had a laundry list. But that laundry list really, really had everything on it that needed to be on there, except one item, discipline and discharge. But it had everything else, health insurance, wages, vacation, sick leave, the whole array of what you would want in a collective bargaining agreement. It was in that law. And so that's the law we worked on. That law became effective in 1977, and that's the law we operated under until February 17th of 2017.
Which brings us to the next question. As you say, you were able to represent your members on any number of issues for a number of years. An election happens November of 2016, and almost immediately, one of the first things the new Republican-controlled government does is what?
Well, I went and met with all the leadership in the Republican Party, and we asked them, what are you going to do with Chapter 20? Oh, we don't know. We haven't even talked about it, yada, yada, yada. In reality, they had a bill in the can. A bill in the can that was very similar to another state that went through this, Wisconsin. It was a bill that was sponsored by the Koch brothers, okay? A puppet organization of theirs, Americans for Prosperity. And they introduced this bill in the first part of February, just dropped it on us. No one, including the Democrats in the Iowa legislature, seen this bill to the day it was introduced. And basically that bill took and made everything in our current law, with the exception of wages, basically either excluded from the scope of bargaining or permissive. So if it's a permissive item, the other side doesn't have to talk to you about it.
Right.
And you can't take that to a neutral. All the things that were mandatory before, that whole laundry list of things, those all became basically excluded and or permissive. The only thing we have left to bargain about that's a mandatory subject to bargaining in the state of Iowa is base wages. Now, base wages are not described in the law. So use your imagination. What is a base wage? Is that the entry-level wage?
Right.
Is that the maximum rate that you get for that pay grade? It's not defined in the law. So I'm going to use the courts to define that. But what they did with that is they also put limits on that base wage. And under our law, we can only, if we have to go to arbitration. Now, if we can settle without arbitration, we can get whatever we want. But if the parties cannot reach an agreement on wages and proceed to go on to final and binding arbitration, we can only get, an arbitrator can only award the Midwest CPI, which is the lowest consumer price index in the country,
right,
or 3%, whichever is lower. Yes. So we were scheduled to go to arbitration because we couldn't get the state stripped every piece of language out of our current contract. Every word is out of it. The only thing that is left to our contract is base wage, and they were going to propose 1%. We could not come to an agreement, so we were scheduled to go to arbitration in February. The Midwest CPI in February was 0.6%.
Wow. Wow.
I had to figure out how to get that arbitration hearing postponed. I did some legal maneuvering, pulled some stuff out of you know where, and I got the arbitration hearing postponed to April. The Midwest CPI in April is 1%.
So
our members are going to get a 1% pay increase on July 1 of 17 and a 1% pay increase on July 1 of 18. And that is the only thing that's going to be in their collective bargaining agreement.
You said just before you said that this, let's go back to this idea of this is a blueprint, whether or not it's exactly the same. A blueprint was formed in Wisconsin back in the day when Scott Walker imposed what we know as Act 10.
Correct.
And that was a, as you connected the dots just now by saying that was about the Koch brothers, that was about Americans for a group that they support, Americans for Prosperity. And what they're trying to do across the country is get these limitations on bargaining for public sector employees. And it has had, strong consequences in Wisconsin, and now it has moved to Iowa and is probably moving to other places. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Well, I believe it is, and I think the Koch brothers have a couple of priorities. First is pass right to work wherever it's not already in existence, and a majority of the states in the United States have
28
right to
states.
Work.
Yep. 28 states now have
their,
right to
their
work.
Goal is to make the other 22 also be right to work, which gets into New York, why this is important to New York. I believe their New York is in their sights, mm-hmm, because there are a lot of public employees in New York. You make this a right to work state, and the boss is then going to have more power, okay? But I believe they want to pass right to work, and they want to pass collective bargaining reform. They call it reform. I call it gutting.
Right, absolutely.
And they want to take away the right of a public employee from being able to sit down at the table. Now, they're also doing this divide and conquer thing, and they did it in Iowa. They're allowing police and fire to basically have the same rights they had prior to February 17th.
They exempted police and fire.
Well, they didn't really exempt them. They created a new classification called public employee. This is where we're different than Wisconsin. They created a new classification under the law of public employees. That class definition contains the state patrol. That contains all police officers that work for a city, county, municipality. That contains all firefighters that work for a city, county, municipality. But what they put in there is a trigger that the bargaining unit has to have more than 30% of that bargaining unit be public safety. So if AFSCME in Iowa has a group that we represent the entire city, and if 30% of that group is police officers, the entire group gets to bargain for everything.
Really?
But if that group is less than 30%, then nobody gets to bargain for it. And that's the situation we're in Iowa. We represent firefighters under the state contract, and we represent cops on our university campuses. Their bargaining unit, they're not 30%. So they don't get to bargain over the same type of benefits as other cops and firefighters do in the state of Iowa. And that's a little twist they threw in from Iowa and Wisconsin.
We're talking with Danny Homan, who is the president of Iowa Council 61 of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. We'll be right back.
Were you a September 11th responder or volunteer? Were you present at the dust cloud on 9/11? Do you live, work, or go to school in the New York City disaster area on 9/11 or in the following months? Do you now suffer from problems such as chronic cough, shortness of breath, anxiety, depression, or have other symptoms? If so, you may be eligible for the World Trade Center Health Program and could receive medical monitoring and treatment at no out-of-pocket cost to you. To learn more about the program and get an application, go to www.cdc.gov/WTC or call 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care. Call today. 1-888-982-4748. 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care.
We're back. I'm Chris Policano. This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. We're on Sunday nights at 8 p.m. and we rebroadcast on Wednesdays at 1:30 p.m. With us in the studio this evening is Danny J. Homan, who is the president of Iowa Council 61, Iowa being a state where there is a new anti-worker law. We've been talking about its the way it has pretty much kneecapped collective bargaining in the state of Iowa, right?
And yeah, it's for public employees. It is basically, in my opinion, taking away our ability to have an equal seat at the table.
Okay. And one of the things, and we talk about this, I get concerned as a union person, as a progressive. I am always concerned about our lousy track record in the midterm elections. And I think one of the things that this shows, what's happening in the Midwest and what's happening across the country, is that the midterm elections matter in terms of state house races and state elections. And one of the things we're going to have to do moving forward is make sure that we get the turnout in the 2018 midterms.
Well, one of the things this has reinforced for me is all elections matter.
And have consequences.
All elections have consequences. And unfortunately, this wasn't a midterm election that caused us to have the consequences we have. But a lot of reporters always ask me, how am I going to keep my members energized for the next election? By the way, the next election is November 6, 2018. Union members across the country should put that day on their calendar.
Right.
Because we have to turn out.
Right.
Working men and women need to put that date on their calendar. I tell the reporters in Iowa that my members are not going to have a problem remembering what was done to them on February 17th or 16th, whichever day it was. Because every 2 weeks when they get their paycheck, they're going to experience all over again what it means to not be able to bargain over health insurance. Under our law, we can't bargain over health insurance. I can't bargain over plan design. I can't bargain over premium payment. Now, anybody that has a half a brain ought to be able to figure out that come January 1 of 18, when our new plan year starts, that state employees in Iowa are going to be paying drastically more for their health insurance, and their health insurance plan will probably not be as good.
This is just another shot at the quality of life for working and middle-class families. I mean, it's that simple.
Well, absolutely. And a 1% pay raise. Let's take a look. If right now in Iowa, on one of our plans, employees pay $20 a month. Okay, it's a good plan. It's a little bit pay more as you go plan, but they pay $20. Mm-hmm. That plan's going to go up, mm-hmm. and they're going to get a 1% pay raise. So basically, if that plan goes up to $200 a month, which this governor has wanted to do for years, and they get a 1% pay raise, that's not a pay raise, that's a pay decrease. And that means, and one of the things I'm telling city counties out there, is on Main Street in Iowa, in Fort Madison, Iowa, where the Iowa State Penitentiary is, my members down there are going to have less money to spend to take their family out to eat, to go to a movie, to go to the Dairy Queen, to do something fun, mm-hmm. because they're going to have to use that spendable income, that extra income they currently have, to pay their health insurance. So this is a direct attack on our quality of life, on the middle class in Iowa. It's, again, the 1% trying to take out those of us that have built this country.
You described Iowa before. We've got a few minutes left. We've got about 6 or 7 minutes left. I wanted to ask you a couple of questions. You described Iowa before as a progressive yet conservative state. And I was wondering if you could elaborate a little bit about, I'm always interested in the minds, we're New Yorkers, we're New Yorkers, we have a certain view of the world, and I am always curious about what is the view outside of the city.
Well, when I talk about Iowa being progressive, you have to take a look at our history. We passed a law in Iowa freeing slaves, and Iowa was one of the states that was involved in the Underground Railroad long before President Lincoln did did what he did. We were one of the first states to admit a woman into the Bar Association. This state, we were the third state in the country to grant gay and lesbian couples the right to be married if they so chose.
I had no idea.
Yeah. So we're progressive in that. We have always been progressive. We're just a small little state of 3 million people. You know, I come here to New York, and there are boroughs in this great in this city that have more people than our entire state has. I spoke last evening at a local membership meeting, and there were it's a local of 17,000 people.
Right.
That's more state employees than the state of Iowa has. Okay, so we're a small state. We've always been conservative. Okay, it's not. But we've been progressive in policy, conservative on the fiscal side, and those two things have really just hit head on with what happened in the last election. I'm very scared that Iowa is going to become one of these red states, and I won't recognize the state I have lived in for 64 years if this trend continues, and that's really a sad day for me.
But do you think that there is any kind of, what's the word I'm looking for, consciousness raising that's happening as people are seeing this? Do you think?
Oh, yeah.
So there is a reaction to this. People are going to, I mean, people say about Wisconsin, nobody elected Scott Walker to kneecap public employees. They elected him to fix the economy of the state of Wisconsin, which he didn't do too well.
Well, and I think I was on a fast track to become the next Kansas. There is not one thing that the Iowa Republican legislature and this governor passed and signed into law in the state of Iowa that they campaigned on for the last elections. Not one. But they have gutted our work comp laws. They have gutted civil service. They have gutted Planned Parenthood. And the list goes on and on and on and on. Every victims assistance fund, they gutted that because they need that money for something else. When this governor was elected, he had a $700 million surplus that right after election grew to $900 million. Right now, today, we are in a deficit situation where they are deappropriating funds because we don't have the money. We have no surplus anymore. It's been spent. And that's not the Republican Party that most of us, well, they always talk about being fiscally conservative.
Right. Absolutely.
But in reality, it's just talk. It's just talk.
Before we go, I just want to spend a couple of minutes talking about how did you get to the union movement and how long have you been involved in the union movement? I know you are on the executive board of AFSCME. You are one of the leading decision makers in the national union. How did you get involved?
I got involved because my dad I grew up in a union household, your typical Midwest union household. My dad was a truck driver, worked for the team, was in the Teamsters Union. Then later on in life, he ended up with the operating engineers as a custodian in a public school in Iowa. And I was drafted in 1971, came back from overseas, did a lot of jobs. I had, you know, when you used to do the resumes, fill out your last three jobs, that I couldn't do that. I mean, I needed pages. In 1984, I got hired by the state of Iowa. 1986, AFSCME organized our group. 1987, I went to work them on a political campaign, Michael Dukakis.
This is your 30th year involved with AFSCME?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I have been an AFSCME member for over 30 years. And I have been, and then in 1988, I went to work full-time for the council. And in 2005, I ran against a 10-year incumbent and won that election 60-40. And the rest is history. 2006, got elected to the International Executive Board. And, you know, this isn't a job. You know, I honestly believe that this, for me, this is a passion. I love what I do most days.
Mm-hmm.
I love the members of Iowa. And I told the group I spoke to here that they're the same people that are in Iowa. Their wishes and dreams and everything, I could take those 200 of them and move them to Iowa, and that'd be the biggest local meeting I've ever had in the state of Iowa. But they're no different than my members in Iowa. And, you know, all we want, I honestly believe this, all working men and women want, all working men and women, is the ability to receive a decent pay, to put a roof over your house, provide for your family, and give your kids what more than what you got from your mom and dad. And I am scared to death that this is going to be the first generation of folks that will not be able to say that. I have a 21-year-old daughter. I am scared to death for her.
And the 21-year-old, I have a 22-year-old daughter, and I think the millennials are scared to death about what their future is. And,
absolutely.
And hopefully they will use that anxiety for better things. Danny Homan, president of Iowa Council 61, a member of the an international vice president for AFSCME. Thank you very much for coming in this evening. It's been a great conversation. Next time you're in town, please stop by again.
I will do that.
We're just about out of time for this week. I've got time for a couple of announcements. April 29th is the People's Climate March in Washington, D.C. Buses are leaving D.C. 37 at 6 a.m. in the morning to get a free seat on the bus to help march against climate change. 212-815-1550 is the number. Again, that's 212-815-1550. And that's about all the time we've got. I'm Chris Policano. The engineer is Andrea Minocchio. The producer is Rudy Orozco. Till next time, ciao.